Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Alice G. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, April 12th, 2022, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. We are reading from the Big Book and we are on page XXVIII, that's Roman numeral 28 in the doctor's opinion. And we will be reading the fourth paragraph, two sentences only out of that fourth paragraph, men and women drink essentially, ending with, cannot differentiate the true from the false. Today's readers are Dana P. on the text, Shelley E., Kara L., and Audrey M. P., Joanne L., Jody E. is our newcomer greeter, and Eileen M. is on announcements. The reference number for Monday, April 11th, 10 a.m. meeting is 18,826. That's 18826. And the reference number for this morning, 7 a.m. meeting, Tuesday, April 12th, is 18,830. That's 18830. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Audrey M. P. to read the 12 steps for us, please.
Good morning. Good morning, Team Tuesday. This is Audrey M. P. from Southern California. I'm a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. And these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Audrey M.P. I will now ask Joanne L. to read the 12 traditions, please.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, world, I should say, because we have the world on this line. And Alice, thank you for your service. Joanne L. from Rhode Island, recovering. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Joanne L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinent requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press *1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are in the Doctor's Opinion on page XXVIII, Roman numeral 28, fourth paragraph, Men and Women Drink Essentially, ending with, We cannot differentiate the true from the false, and we are commenting on those two sentences only. And I will now ask Dana P. to get us started.
Good morning, Alice. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Boy, thank you so much for your service. Dana P., I am in California. This is powerful. Wow. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. Yeah, wow. So what comes to me and what's popping up in my mind right now is that, you know, all of this is wrapped around my fear to face life. I mean, I was afraid to face life. And I turned to food and food behaviors. And what happens when I'm in fear is one of three things. Either I run, I fight, or I hide. And there is so much hiding here, and that elusiveness, you know, and it's that shifty sort of thing, an evasiveness. Elusiveness is evasiveness also. And so what is the effect? You know, what was the effect? For me, it was a total numbing out. I didn't have to face life. I didn't have to do what I needed to do. Or at least it was on pause, if you will, because always that stuff was still there, you know, and this is tax week, and I won't go into that, but, you know, it's so easy to get into fear, and what do? I run, or I hide, or I fight. And this program, the amazing, amazing thing about this program is that what I do waking up each morning now is I deal with whatever's coming up. You know, I do what I need to do. And it's kind of like I think about when little kids are at that stage in their life where if you put the blanket up in front of your face, so they think that you're not there. I think they call it object impermanence or something like that. But it's a small child thing. And I realize it's like that's how I'm reacting to life, like a little child, not like a grown-up. And what this program is doing is that it's teaching me how to be a grown-up, these 12 steps, my fellows, but really ultimately coming down to being honest with myself and my higher power, because that's what it's all about, honesty and being revealing, sharing what's going on rather than hiding and being evasive and skirting around the issue, saying what's true and what's not true. I was deluding myself that what was true was not true and what was false was true. And so now I'm just so grateful to be able to work through this program, go through these paragraphs, really one by one sentence, because I knew it was injurious. I just couldn't figure out how to manage that because that's what I was doing, essentially thinking, managing, putting Band-Aids on all of these abscesses. And what this program is doing for me and has done for me is to allow me to look at it and to clean it out, to clean out that abscess so it can heal. So I'm going to pass with that, and thanks so much. I'm excited to wake up each morning now rather than in fear to wake up to live my life. So I'm going to pass.
Thank you so much, Dana P. I will now take a list of names, and remember that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So star one to unmute, and one at a time, let me know who wants to share today.
Hi, Dina JR. Hi,
let's try that again.
Danielle W.
Golda.
Danielle
Golda from
W.
Israel.
Lisa JR.
Golda. Lisa JR.
Carla C.
Got Bruce.
Danielle M.
Bruce. Danielle M.
Jordan L.
I know, everybody is so excited, right? This is a great paragraph. Jordan L.
Eileen M.
Lisa J.R.
Eileen. I got you, Lisa. Eileen.
Okay, thanks.
And Melinda. I think we'll stop there, and we'll catch you next round. Was that Melinda? We'll catch you next
Belinda.
Round, okay? Okay.
Belinda.
Belinda. Right, I got you. All right. Okay, this is what I've got. This is who I've got. Danielle W., Golda, Lisa J.R., Carla C., Bruce, Danielle M., Jordan L., Eileen M., and Belinda, I think it was. All right, so Danielle W., let's start with you, and please let us know where you're from when you share. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Danielle W. from Southern California by way of Vancouver for the next 5 months. And just so happy to be here and to be part of this group. What sticks out for me this morning right away was the word sensation. You know, I didn't realize I ate because I couldn't cope with anything. I didn't know how to live life. I couldn't feel my feelings. And I could put food in my mouth and for a moment, everything was okay. You know, everything felt okay. Now, obviously that was a delusion, it was a lie, but that was the way that I was able to get through the day. Is somebody unmuted? Hello?
We can hear you, Danielle, but there was someone else unmuted. Can you go ahead, Danielle? Well, now everybody got muted. Hello?
Can you hear me now? Hello?
Danielle W., are you there? Hello? Danielle, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Danielle.
And I can hear you, so.
Okay, go ahead.
I can hear you, Danielle.
I think we lost Danielle. Danielle, can you star one to unmute? Are you still there?
You can be heard.
This is Alice. Is Danielle there, though? All right, maybe she can call back in. Golda, star one to unmute and share
this
with us.
This is Danielle.
Today. Oh, okay, go ahead, Danielle. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now I've got to, let me think where I'm, okay, so this idea of sensation, that when I put food in my mouth for a brief second, and it was so brief because immediately the guilt and the shame would come up, but for that second in the lie, I had a moment. I had a moment of what I thought peace felt like. It would allow me to push my feelings back down. And what was so interesting to me is I started to get in recovery, and in the early, early days of my sobriety, I really had to feel my feelings for the first time. I had to let them come up. And it was in that, the absence of food, that I realized the lie I'd been living, that the bite, the swallow, was what was, I thought was making life manageable for me. And it never really worked because it was this vicious cycle. I'd eat to suppress, to feel better, and then I would feel badly about it, and then I'd make promises I couldn't keep, and I was on, you know, the hamster wheel. When I stayed in sobriety long enough and I learned how to work with my feelings and I did my recovery and I started to have a spiritual experience, I was able to find that same sensation in the presence of my higher power. And it's amazing to me when I'm anxious or I have work to do around fear, resentment, selfish behavior, dishonesty. If I spend time with my higher power, I find the sensation that I spent my whole life looking for. I find the peace and the love that's available to me. I don't need to eat over it anymore. I just need to go find my higher power, hold hands, connect, and I find what I was looking for. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle W. from California. Golda from Israel, please share with us the first initial of your last name also when you share, please. Star one to unmute, Golda.
Thank you so much. Thank you. This is Golda H. from Israel. And I really relate to all of this. It's interesting. My worst compulsions for food were, you know, because my addiction kept progressing. It just kept progressing over the years. It was at its worst when I was actually in a program. I was in another food program. But it wasn't working right. And I was just upset. I was in the obsession night and day and trying to control my food. And then I would go off and just say, the heck with it, and just binge for a few weeks and then go back to control. But I never really left the mental obsession those years. And it was very painful. And I just going from restaurant to restaurant, pantry to pantry. Well, if I eat this, if I don't eat this, if I do this, if I don't do that, it won't be okay. It will be okay. Who cares if it's okay? That whole thing. And the thing that I'm relating to here is that liking the effect, it's exactly right what was shared also. The immediate feeling of the release from anxiety was so poignant. And I was always chasing that relief with every bite. And of course, it, you know, I may have it for a minute, but, you know, it became very painful. It never stayed pleasant. And the truth from the false is that the truth was, as I was so filled with anxiety and humiliation about people and about relationships. That's where my core issues are. And I couldn't deal with them. I didn't know how to deal with them. I was actually in other addictions that were keeping it in place, which I didn't realize at the time. But I was just dealing with, I didn't want to feel that pain. I didn't, and you know, they say if you want to know why you drink or why you eat, just stop doing it and you'll find out why. So anyway, so I, the truth from the false is that the truth is that it was hurting me to eat like that. But the false was it really felt like I needed to eat like that. I had to eat like that. And I couldn't differentiate what was true, what was false. It just felt like reality. And I'm just so grateful today that I'm not in that obsession. I'm not in that obsession today. And, you know, and I need to speak up once a week at this meeting, and I need to do my other tools and work the steps with my sponsor, read the big book with my sponsor cover to cover, which I've never really done before. So I'm new at that. So I'm really grateful that I'm in more neutrality about food than I've ever been. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Golda from Israel. Lisa JR, star one to unmute and share with us.
Hi, good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for your service. I don't know how you guys do it, but thank you so much. I'm Lisa JR from Baltimore. And I can remember this paragraph when I first read it, like it was yesterday. And that was, oh gosh, almost 6 years ago. And I remember this was where, in the big book, that I knew that I could totally identify in, that I knew that I had a problem, that I couldn't get around it by lying to myself. You know, I love that acronym for denial, didn't even know I'm lying, because man, that was so true for me. You know, 50 some odd years ago, this disease started to have a stronghold in my life when my parents would fight and I would have to numb out by stuffing my face as a little child. And that effect took me to a place that was outside of my family of origin. It took me to a place that, you know, was beautiful for a time. But we all know, you know, that refrigerator is like a church, you know, two big shiny doors. You open it, a warm light shines out. And I used to laughingly think, you know, the Hallelujah chorus should be playing when the refrigerator got opened, because it was my God. Hook, line, and sinker. It was my God. Food was my God. And, you know, I denied. I was a great liar. You know, I started doing that too when I was a kid. And pretty soon I lied to myself. But this disease marches on. And I went from being a foodie snob. Fine dining became, you know, Taco Bell or 7-Eleven. And, you know, Bon Appetit became get in my belly. You know, I was just like an animal at the end. And I came here and I had recently got proof positive. I went away for a month at the end of the year, lost my parents, broke my knee, had a big pity party, poor me. And when I broke my phone, I didn't go to any meetings for a time. And man, I needed to put my, have my feet match my lips, because I always tell sponsees, you know, all you got to do to see this disease is watch the animal planet. You know, it's the dummy that strays away from the pack that gets it. You know, the animal that isn't paying attention and staying with the herd. So yes, this means even more today than it did then. And I will pass with that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Lisa JR from Baltimore. Carla C., you're up next, followed by Bruce. Carla, please let us know where you're from.
Hi, this is Carla C., and I'm in California. Grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. So grateful for all the shares, for your service, and for being here today. You know, what I was reminded of is putting aside everything I think I know, because do I want to be happy or do I want to be right? Do I want to get well or do I want to stay sick? And I love how this program works. This program helps me be of service to others. And I can, you know, weigh and measure my food and, you know, be happy, joyous, and free. And that's how it works for me. I'm neutral today, and I'm very grateful. So thanks for letting me share, Carla in California.
Thank you so much, Carla C. in California. Bruce, you're up next, followed by Danielle M.
Thank you. Bruce E. in Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Florida area. And thank you. I was going to say thank you for picking this reading, but it's the one that came up next. And, man, I'm loving it. And that initial share that I could identify with that when I was a little kid, 5, 10 years old, I'd put the blanket up over my head, right? And then I wasn't afraid of the somebody being under the bed or somebody being in the closet or some, you know, the fear temporarily might have gone away just because I did that, but that was the false. And I like this where men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And this is it. This is what I like. I like the effect produced by food, you know, so carbs, sugar, caffeine, line them up. You know, I like the effect produced by them. You know, I really do. I mean, it just takes me out of myself and out of the world. It just does. So those are my red light foods. And so I was in the hospital recovering from some surgery, and they were giving me morphine and that all that stuff they give you. And my wife asked me, she said, were you that high when you were using drugs? And I thought to myself about the caffeine and the sugar. And when I'd eat a dozen donuts or so and 2 or 3 cappuccinos, and man, I got higher than that morphine, you know, higher than any drugs I ever used, you know, because I like the effect produced by caffeine and sugar. I mean, that is really what it comes down to. So have to give up that whole thought of that, of having that again, put down all those red light foods. I'm recovered in Florida. The sensation is so elusive that while the emit is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the truth from the false. So I'm talking to a guy yesterday that's been my friend, for a real close friend, for 17 years. He's incarcerated in the prison system, North Carolina. And we're talking. And he says, I like that when we used to talk on the phone, you used to read to me. I said, well, let me get this. And I pulled this up and got this paragraph out. And I read that, the true from the false. I said, what do you think that means, that people can't differentiate the truth from the false? And he says, that what it is, he hesitated for a moment, and he said, what it is that I blame other people for everything.
That's time, please.
He said, yeah, thank you. I blame everybody, and that's the false, because I keep thinking it's everybody else's problem, and everybody else is the problem. That's a false when really I'm the problem. So I thank you very much for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks, Bruce. You from Florida. Danielle M., you're up next, followed by Jordan L. Danielle, please let us know where you're from.
Hi. Yes, my name is Danielle M., and I am from Virginia. And thank you for calling on me. Thank you for everyone being here and actually having this meeting. I really appreciate it. I haven't been coming to this meeting very long. I have been in the OA program for a while. But I just really, really appreciated reading these couple sentences today. And a couple of thoughts that came to my mind were that the process of going from denial to awareness for me is something that my higher power has to give me. Because when I came into the program, I mean, when I came into OA, I was in a lot of denial about what I did with food. I
I did have a feeling that something was wrong with what I did with food, but I had no idea completely how insidious the disease is and how it really had taken over my life. And so so I've been away for a while, but I have struggled continuously with slipping. And I feel like I've gotten to a place where I have new awareness. And the new awareness that has come to me recently, and this is very helpful to me, is that I will go through the day and I will ask to have, I will pray in the morning. I will pray the first three, I'll say the first three steps and then say a prayer that I don't want to eat compulsively that day. But by the time the evening comes around, at around 8 o'clock, I forget all of that. And so what I feel grateful for is that I'm coming to see, yes, that's part of the disease. I am going to forget. There's not going to be one reason that's going to be good enough to stop me. That's what I have learned from my own personal experiences. And so coming here today and listening to other people share, it gave me a lot of hope that, okay, I feel like I have a very full awareness of what the problem is. I have a disease that makes me forget that I have a disease. So what tools or what things can I use to help me move on from that point? But I want to have compassion with myself in this process, because I don't have to beat myself up for not having the awareness and in being in the denial for so long. That's where I want to please. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Danielle M. from Virginia. Jordan L., you're up next, followed by Eileen M., and then Belinda, I think it is.
Hey, good morning. My name is Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado, and grateful to be absent and on a meeting this morning. So men and women eat, I'm going to replace that, essentially because they like the effect produced by food. And that is like, when I came in here, I had to, the steps opened up for me when I was able to let go of the shame that I was carrying around being a compulsive overeater. And I guess like the way that happened for me was coming to understand that food, especially like my alcoholic foods, the ones that I had identified were alcoholic for me, they had an effect on everyone. It wasn't just me. Those foods, like it's not saying alcoholic men and women here, it's saying men and women, everyone. What I came to understand was that the effect that they had on me was different. That I was a distinct entity, that I was set apart from these other men and women. And, you know, from you guys, like people that were able to describe this same sort of difference out of their own experience, I learned that that was a compulsive overeater. That the effect that it was having on me was different. those people that seemed to be able to like control themselves when they ate my alcoholic foods, it wasn't having the same effect on them. So it wasn't because they were especially willful or had more willpower than me or were better than me. They were able to like put it down in a way that I wasn't able to put it down. It was because it didn't have the same effect on them. They weren't fighting. They weren't experiencing the fight that I experienced. And so that enabled me to let go of all that shame around being a compulsive overeater, being as overweight as I was and had been, and my weight has always gone, it always went up and down and up and down and up and down. And I was able to let go of all of that and work the steps and do it from a place of, God, knowing that, like, this was life or death, you know, like, this was, if I was going to recreate my life, I really had to lean in and, like, dive into this both feet first. No,
please,
back or hesitation. So thanks for letting me share. That's what I got. Hey,
thanks, Jordan L. from Colorado. Eileen M., you're up next, followed by Belinda, and then we'll take another lineup.
Good morning. This is Eileen M., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. And, you know, when I got into OA, I had no idea why I overate and, you know, no idea of how this program really worked. And, you know, that's that first sentence, men and women drink because they like the effect. I mean, that just nails it right there. That's the whole explanation of, you know, why, what was I looking for? I was looking for, you know, there was some kind of payoff to doing this behavior. You know, I had no tools to approach life at all. And, you know, looking for the effect, to me, you know, compulsive overeating was my immediate release from reality. It's somehow I could just check out, you know, and it was my way of procrastinating. And what I know today is that procrastination is a form of fear. It's really fear, you know, and things would just pile up because I wasn't available to deal with them. And, God, you know, you know, all my decisions in my life were really based on fear. And I just thought, well, if I, you know, if I don't deal with my problems, they'll somehow disappear, right? And I really believe that, you know, I didn't have to really deal with them. And they would just pile up, like it says that in this chapter, that, it, you know, problems pile up on us. And you know what's really interesting is that compulsive eating is not considered substance abuse like drinking and drugs. I was always surprised by that. It's actually considered or viewed by the mental health profession as a behavior. And, you know, we know that there's a physical component, definitely. But, you know, behaviors are, what I've learned in this meeting is that behaviors are driven or they're influenced by thoughts, or I should say they're preceded by thoughts. And, you know, the book talks a lot about insanity. And the big book definition is unhealthy thinking. It's my thinking is unhealthy. So I could admit that, yeah, compulsive overeating caused injury to me, but I couldn't stop on my own willpower. And I couldn't figure out why I couldn't stop, you know. But I'm so grateful because now I have tools today, which are the steps, and, you know, I can apply the steps to all my problems. That, you know, and Bill says in the book, you know, we have a way of life that solves all our problems, and it is true. You know, I can say that coming from the other side, the perspective of the other side, you know, is that I have a way of living, and I don't have to go back to food. So I'm so grateful. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Eileen M. from New Hampshire. And I think it's Belinda or Linda. Please let us know the first initial of your last name and where you're from. Star one to unmute.
Okay, hi. It's Belinda, Berlinda. New York. I've been to AA before, and I don't know, just listening to the people say that they were there so many years, I didn't want to stay that long. I just wanted to lose a couple of pounds and just keep it moving, and I lost a lot being in the fellowship. But as soon as I left, it seems like it just blew up again. And what got me to the reading was it says they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. My true from my false is that I just didn't think that I needed overeating until I realized one day I was making plans on the 11th to go to a gastro doctor to get the lap band because I figured that was the solution. And that Sunday of that Monday, I met a lady that belongs to the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, and she was explaining to me how you guys use the big book, and I was like, really? Because I've used the Big Book for almost 13 years, so I kind of know the Big Book, but just knowing that that's the tool that you use, I said, well, maybe I really have a chance here. Because in the Big Book, it tells me that I have to be honest with myself, and I have to talk about the stuff that I go through. And if I use sugar, I need to say I use sugar. I need to not worry about, feeling shameful and saying that I use sugar. But thank God that since I met this lady and she told me the things that I need to stay away from, I've been abstinent for those things for 2 days. And she said if I go to the third day, then I can call her and we can start doing some work. So I'm excited. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Belinda from New York. We have time for a couple more shares. If anyone would like to hit star one to unmute and share with us.
Hi, this is Eli.
Eli?
Yeah.
Okay. Eli and someone else has a really bad connection. Sounds windy.
Could you hear Jill?
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 Tanya G.
Tanya D. I think, I don't know, I've got you, Joe. I don't know that we have time for all three, but we'll start with Eli. Star one to unmute and share with us first initial of your last name and where you're from.
Hi, everybody. My name is Eli W. I'm a compulsive overeater calling in from the Netherlands, originally from New York. This is my first meeting back in a while. I'm a veteran of the 12-step world for about 14 years, and I've been in and out of both the fellowship and recovery with regard to food. I'm very ambivalent about being here. I'm also surrounded by a bunch of children, so I apologize for the noise. Anyway, I want to keep it to the reading. The thing that really jumped out at me is though they admitted it is injurious, I can't, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. And that line has always been very meaningful to me because I've noticed that when I'm not spiritually connected, when I'm not spiritually fit, and I'm receding back into either this behavior or other compulsive behaviors that I have, I notice that everything becomes very vague and very confusing. And whereas when my mind is and my spirit are oriented towards a relationship with the higher power, I start getting more and more clarity. It seems to me that when I don't prioritize that, I drift and recede into a world of confusion and vagueness. And it's not so much that I have a strong conviction that eating will make me feel better. It's more just like, is this bad? I don't know. I guess so. Whatever. it's the fuzzy thinking, that mental blank spot, I don't have the internal power to bring to mind with sufficient force the memory of the suffering of even a week or a month ago. I mean, let alone 24 hours ago. So, I'm back. I have an appointment with a dietitian that was recommended to me by a fellow in the program. And I'm looking to get back into this world and find a sponsor and all that jazz. So, thanks. I'll leave it there.
Thank you so much, Eli W. from the Netherlands, formerly from New York, I think you said. And next up is Jill. Jill, please share the first initial of your last name and where you're from.
This is Jill C. I'm from Virginia. I'm actually calling in from Massachusetts this week. I'm returning to these meetings I've been in recovery. I've just been going to other meetings. I'm very grateful. Listening and thinking about the effect, thanks be to God in this program, I've been abstinent for over 14 years. And in remembering that effect that food, I mean, that's 14 years of freedom from the phenomenon of craving. You know, the effect it produced for me immediately was just responding to that mental obsession, that craving, that crowd noise from the kitchen. And for me, the lie was that it was just going to be today and tomorrow I would, you know, start that diet, or Monday I would start that diet. Like, there was this continual lie, for me anyway, that I knew it was injurious, but I was going to stop it tomorrow or maybe the next meal or some other time, because I just had to respond to this craving. And I could never be abstinent without relief from these cravings. So those 10-step promises, I didn't understand them until I experienced them. But the beautiful thing is there are these causes and conditions, that anxiety, that fear, that is, you know, that the cravings and the eating just kind of cover up. And what's beautiful for me now is, without that obsession, without that living to satisfy the demands of that obsession and those cravings and all that circus and energy, I actually, you know, this whole program is helping me to, gosh, you know, what do I feel? What am I thinking? What do I need? And, you know, the steps and, you know, the steps and the tools and the spiritual connection actually lead me to real solutions to my problems. Whereas food just kept me completely in bondage to self, because I'm being totally held hostage by these cravings and this obsession, and I'm in this darkness because I can't really see a solution. And then it's just been a while since I really recalled that that's how I lived for so many years. And I'm really grateful that, you know, today I focus on the steps and I focus on the spiritual. And I really understand that things don't actually have to go my way. And I can find relief, not in food, not in obsession, not even necessarily me doing anything sometimes, but trusting. Because sometimes there is nothing to do but trust and accept. I'm dealing with some cancer right now and health issues, and I'm totally not in control. Food couldn't help me.
But out of time, please.
So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Josie from Virginia. And Tanya, I'm sorry, we'll have to wrap up now, but hopefully you can tune in tomorrow and share. We will now close the meeting with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Shelley E. please read A Vision for You?
You bet. Good morning. This is Shelley E., a recovered compulsive overeater in Arlington, Texas. The Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.